Much. Thank you to Sunny for asking me to speak and for everybody who showed up for themselves today, whether you wanted to or not, whether your head thought it was a good idea or not. I'm Lynn P, and I am an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is March 11th, 1984. I just celebrated 40 years of sobriety, which is shocking because I didn't plan on having like 40 days of sobriety. I was somebody who got sober for all the wrong reasons. So I'm a big advocate about I don't care why you come into these rooms. I don't know. I don't care if you're here for your brother, your mother, the court, whoever it is, I could care less. I just want you in the rooms or to know if you are in the rooms. A moment of clarity can shift your life. And that's what we get here. It's magical. I always am sensitive to people that have had a lot of relapse. I want you to know that relapse, in my opinion, isn't actually part of recovery. It's a part of the disease. And that recovery is recovery and you never have to use again. When I hear people say, this is my fourth sobriety, I just like, make this your last. Make this your last. This is a gift. And I don't know how I got it. I came in here to get Roger. Okay, just so we all know, because Roger got sober. Okay, and I thought it would cut down on the competition, right? He said he thought I had a problem and that I should get help. I thought he was crazy. I thought these people had programmed him and that I could help. But in the meantime, I was gonna, sure, like I'll do this sober thing. Like, has to cut down on the competition. There couldn't possibly be any women that are sober because it doesn't sound like fun. And so that was my 20-year-old brain. And I came in for Roger and I stayed for myself. I didn't get Roger, I got sobriety. And I always believe that there's this little golden thread that is weaved throughout my entire life. And the problem is, I can't always see it when I'm in it. What this thing that's happening to me today, whatever person, place, thing, or situation is happening. What it's going to mean to me later. My job, as I see it in my years of sobriety with my own experience, my own internal strength, and my own hope now, is that I just stay stuck, that I stay in my seat, that I keep moving forward, even if I don't know the answer. And having step two, my favorite of all steps, came to believe that a power greater than myself could, or ourselves could restore us to sanity. It implies that I'm insane. I just told you I didn't tell you I went into a treatment program, but so you know, I went into a treatment program to get a guy. If that doesn't imply some level of insanity, I don't know what does. Okay. But to qualify, alcohol really was my drug of choice. I found alcohol when I was between 12 and 13. And it was back in the day when we would all meet in parking lots and chip in on a case of beer. And I'd make sure that I got like half of the case of beer. And I was that girl that would then throw up in someone's vehicle, right? And that's back when it was like the Datsuns and the Toyotas where the back seats didn't have a door that opened. And I remember two separate times throwing up in people's cars, like brand new cars, like down the side of, you know, their car. So that I got out of the car drunk and they were left to clean up my mess, which kind of was the history of my using and parts of my sobriety at times too, before I actually like applied the steps. So to tell you that I drank alcoholically from the beginning, that would be my truth. I came from a family of five. It was an intact family. My parents were still together. My dad was a Danish man whose parents came over on the boat, met in Nebraska. My grandma didn't show a lot of emotion, so neither did my dad. My mom was very nice. Everybody loved my mother. She worked at a Catholic high school for 25 years, and my mother was really nice. And these were two good people working really hard to provide a really great life for me, but it really didn't matter because the ism of alcoholism was happening for me. And I think it all really hit when I was in high school, and you know, I suffered many traumas of my own making, getting myself in high-risk situations where then I was, you know, assaulted or hurt or in dangerous situations because drinking gave me that freedom, gave me a new freedom and a new happiness to just go do whatever I wanted. And there was a price to pay for all of it. You know, my drinking progressed, and I actually, as we do, graduated early from high school on dramatic reasons, whatever. And I had the opportunity to go to junior college or college earlier at 16 years old. And as you will all understand, I had great opportunity and I was able to sabotage all of it. So by the time I came into the rooms, the very first time I went to the rooms was with a boyfriend who got sent by the court. And I remember thinking how great it was that you people had a place to go. I really did. I thought that was so good for you because I was just visiting. And by the time I was 20, I ended up, what they used to say is, with the back then was the $25,000 big book to go into a treatment program. Now it would be, I don't know, four times that amount. But the truth of the matter was, is that that is how my God, I believe, carved away, because my other issue was clearly guys, you know, being willing to go into a treatment center to get a guy's approval, let you know just a little bit about who I am. So I don't always need to qualify, but the truth of the matter is, I didn't know what God was doing for me that I could not do for myself that day that I sat in front of that counselor who told me that I needed to go into that program. That fragile moment altered the course of my life in a way that I could never have thought of. And when I went into that program, you know, I did come out and I stayed sober, and yeah, I encountered things like the 13th step, which I'm not speaking on today, so I won't, but I had lots of drama, you know, that kept me sober. Right. And, I had a lot of things happen to me in sobriety, and obviously in 40 years, there's a ton. But what I want you to know, and how I feel about this second step, is that I can have insane thinking that is just like, you know, a 20-year-old going into a treatment center to get a guy. Yesterday, because my head is still there, my ism is still there at 40 years, I didn't feel well. And I hadn't been out of the house in a couple of days because I'm working on these projects, and I was left alone with what's in between these ears. And I was like, oh, like everything, I had impending doom in a way that was suffocating. You know, and I had thrown my back out too. And I was just like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? I put all this into this dream. What am I going to do? I have this, this is going to happen. I was stuck in my head, and I was literally paralyzed with a level of depression that was just like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Every day there is a level of insanity that I need to surrender to. It's insane thinking. It doesn't mean we're certifiable, but doesn't mean that we're not, right? But it does mean that I have to learn to deconstruct those thoughts so I can get to a place of sanity where I can trust a power greater than myself. Sometimes that's one person on a phone when I tell them my crazy thoughts, they can go, okay, idiot, like, let's break this down, you know? Okay, so you feel this way right now. Do you have enough money for today? Oh my gosh, are you living in something that you helped build? Yes, I did. Like breaking all these things down. Like, okay, you're just feeling this way right now. But it will shift. It will change. If I can get powerless over my own thoughts on a daily basis and see where my life has become unmanageable, sometimes that puts me in a state of insanity. Like, oh my gosh, look at all these things that are going wrong. Right? Well, that's where I roll to the second step, where that I feel a little bit out of my body or have some insane thinking or depression or anger or whatever the emotion is that makes me not feel level. That if I can reach out to another human being, if I can show up to a meeting, and now we have these online meetings that are crazy town, right? You can hop on anytime. I have a chance to just sit in a room. And even if, like, somebody who's judging me right now, like, what's up with her hair? I don't know, you guys. I don't know what's up with my hair right now, you know, or whatever it is. Like, oh, she's annoying. Oh my God. Blah. Right. She's so California. I am. I'm all that. Judge away. Oh, you know, if it gets you out of yourself to just stay in the room, that's all you need sometimes. That's all I need sometimes, is to be in a room and take the focus off of myself. I can get to this place of trusting a power, whether it's the group, a person, or God. I don't have a problem with God. I don't have a problem saying he. I don't care. You know, I don't. What I need to know is that I am not my own God. Because when I start believing that I have all the answers, and some, another person has done me wrong, and factually they may have, a little list. Like when I start getting intoxicated with myself and my own thoughts, I'm in danger town. Like I have to have a level of humility to be able to go, okay, let me right size this situation before me. I want you to know in this 40 years, I started working in recovery with adolescents. It's been my passion for a long time. I think maybe subconsciously a clinician would tell me I'm, you know, going back to heal some childhood wounds. Okay. We all have trauma. I'm so over the trauma of the trauma. I can't even tell you. Like talking about trauma gives me trauma. It's like, let's just live. Why don't we do that? As a group, all of us in AA, if we can just choose to be people that show up for life and show people how that's done, that would be amazing. Because, you know, personally, I get nervous about the level of adolescents I work with now that are paralyzed to breathe, right? Like, and I feel like I've been given the keys to the kingdom. These steps, unreal. When I can focus and not be obsessed with myself, I try to schedule that in every couple of days, no matter what. If I can do that and listen to chapter 5, listen to chapter 3, like listen when things are read, it is mind-blowing how brilliant these words are. Like, how were they able to take what we think and put it into these words to know that we all have this common bond in this room? We are so fortunate. I usually start my share with talking about how grateful I am to have a label to call this thing that wants to sabotage me every day. Literally, like, you know, waking up, we all know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, you know, that tells you it's not going to work out. They're not going to call, the check's not going to come, the bill's going to be too high, I'm not going to get the job, something's going to happen, I'm going to be fired, something's going to, whatever it is, whatever your person, place, thing, or situation is, this ism that we have of alcoholism, in my opinion, and it's all my opinion, exists within us to just bring us down. And our job, my job, is to know that I've been given the gift of these 12 steps that lets me deconstruct the thoughts in my head, like instantaneously now, when I allow it, I am powerless over my thinking. It is making my life unmanageable. Getting the power back means I tell you the truth so I can hear my thoughts outside my head and go, what am I saying? For those of you in this room, you know, I don't know how many newcomers are here. Whoever is, welcome. And you don't ever have to leave. Don't leave. Don't give up your seat for any person, place, thing, or situation, because in 40 years, I can guarantee you this. My sponsor, Mindy S., said something to me once. I told her a very long story, which I'm sure you guys are shocked, you know, that I can talk a lot. It's very long, very detailed. Gave her all the principles, the setting, everything where I'd been done wrong. These people, right? And so I'm on the phone with her. I'm laying it out, talking forever. And then she says, yeah. She's like, well, Lynn, everything changes. Have a good day. Hangs up on me. I was like, what the hell? What the hell? I had so much to say, right? She was to be my attorney and my advocate and get on board and talk about how horrible this person was who had done me wrong. And, but it's so funny. I tell her all the time, you know, Mindy, like I have ridden on that for years. Know that everything changes, whatever you're being confronted with right now, not because you are in this room and you are breathing and you have options. The one thing I thank God for when I wake up in the morning, when I remember to pray, because sometimes I don't, because I get going on my day to take over, right? I just say, thank you for the opportunity. Because with opportunity, anything is possible. With these 12 steps, anything is possible. For those of you that are in this room, I'm leaping forward to say to you, if you are still struggling with staying sober, like not picking up the first drink, whatever it is your thing, I hear you. And what I'm going to tell you is you're already a success. Because right now, if you're not drinking on the screen or you don't have a straw in your mouth with vodka in it, you are a success. You already have it. Don't say, I'm trying to get sober. You already are sober. Do not give up your seat for any person, place, thing, or situation, no matter how daunting it is. I have walked through a marriage that I thought was 22 years, you guys. There's a meeting in LA. It was at Rodeo, and it used to be the sparkly meeting, like going to a nightclub, right? So it'd be really fun to go. So I met my husband there. Everyone dresses like really nice. They have great speakers. Everyone's inside. I met my husband outside, right? Smoking in the non-smoking section. Sorry, my thing just unplugged. Yeah, smoking in the non-smoking section. So there was that. And he was an artist. Okay, so there we go on that. Meaning he was unemployed. That's what we like to call that here in LA. So I, you know, I asked for some trouble. when we got divorced, I was entering in the paperwork and I thought it was 22 years I'd been married. I mean, I did used to ditch fifth period, which was math in high school, to be clear, but it was actually 24 years. I was like, wow, how'd that happen? Where'd those go? But in that, I see Jeffrey. Hi, Jeffrey. My ex-husband was a chronic relapser and he cheated a lot. That did end up sending me to our sister program, which I was never going to go to, Al-Anon. And I believe Al-Anon saved my sobriety. But I can tell you what I do know is that his relapsing, the things that he did today, I know had nothing to do with me. Sure, I contributed to it, you know, just by being me. But these were his choices and his things between his God. But in that amount of time, I stayed sober. Just because he cheated, I didn't. I'd walk through pain in meetings, like knowing like I'd show up to meetings. There's a Julia Roberts movie where she stands up in like a women's club thing. And she's like, anyone who's had any kind of sex with my husband, could you just stand and raise your hand? I swear I wanted to do that at Cedars in LA. Like, hi. You know, anyone? Okay, just checking. It was humiliating, right? Like here I had time, but I still took my seat. Who gives a shit? Oh, I said I wouldn't swear, sorry. I have to care more about me and my sobriety than my ego. And it was hard. And I would get up on the podium and I would share my full story and I would talk about how, you know, my husband had cheated. I mean, he sometimes would be in the audience. I'm like, sorry, bud. I mean, you know, I've forgiven you, but this is part of my story that I was able to stay sober through that. I raised two stepkids that I used to refer to as my crow's feet. This is Luke. This is Amber. They were just brutal. They were brutal. A lot of things in my life. But what I need you guys to know is that I chose a life with a man who was an artist, who was unemployed when I met him, had great successes while we were together, who had stepkids. Who am I going to blame for that? Me. But what else did I get out of it? My son, who's 32 today, that I was talking to before I got on the phone, and my 17-year-old, you know, who I fought the Orange County courts for, who actually biologically, very Jerry Springery, is my step-grandson. That I fought the courts to take from his parents who were drug abusing. And he's my boy. He's my boy. And I wouldn't have been able to show up for these things had I not had the tools of this program. Had I not felt moments of insanity, but had a faith that I could be leveled out to some sanity. I will also tell you, the part that makes us unhinged, that part that comes to attack us in the morning with our thoughts, that's also, in my opinion, our genius. I feel like we are some of the most sensitive people walking the planet. We feel everything. Everything has a pulse. So we've got to have these tools to deconstruct the power of that and channel our energy into something positive where I can make a decision to turn my will and my life over to God. Well, that's a big decision, but I have to do like micro turning over every day. You know, when I walk into a store and somebody's got a bad attitude, you know, I feel like I need to inform them of such, right? That like, what's your problem, right? What's your problem? Like, why are you treating me this way? You know, do you not know who I am? You probably do. That's probably why you're treating me this way. But the truth is I have to allow grace for other people and do something and ask myself constantly, how important is this? Maybe this person's having a bad day. Who cares? Get on with it. I could talk about a rude Starbucks barista for like 4 hours, right? Which is me not paying attention to my life. Like, get over it. Like, what are you avoiding by talking about this other person? What are you avoiding by not getting into action? I just want everyone in this room to know that I do believe there's a power greater than ourselves that will restore us to sanity. That with 40 years, not only did I was I active in that marriage? Did I help raise those kids? Do I have a son who I love, granddaughters who I adore, a boy who I fought for, a house that I built? I remember when I was first sober in Hollywood, I would drive by, I lived at my mom's, and I would drive her flesh-toned Mustang that when you turned it off went, yeah, it was just a nightmare. Driving around Hollywood, looking in somebody's window like a creeper, going, I hope someday, like I'm gonna have my own apartment, my own refrigerator. Be so cool. Like, I want that. And part of my head would tell me, you're never gonna have that. You're not gonna get that. It was only an apartment I wanted in Hollywood. Well, now we know it's kind of hard because it's like buying a townhome. But my head will always tell me I can't. And my program tells me, yes, I can. Yes, I can. And I will. Because what's the alternative? To believe and lay down? Well, there's a guarantee you will have nothing that you want and that your life will not change. And listen, when I get up and I face the day and I do the things I need to do, my head's like, I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to. I just take the action anyway. And then sooner the two come together, like, oh my God, I'm so glad I got up out of bed. Oh, I'm so glad I made that phone call. We have the keys to the kingdom. We have these steps that other people do not have. And I guarantee you that if you surrender to whatever it is, each day you will have little moments of not only grace, but miracles because we're awake and we're aware for them. We have this gift. And I think it also is part of our duty that we're of service where we can be. You know, you can't be of service so much that you're making your life unmanageable because then you're not going to feel sane. You're not going to feel connected. But I want you to know in getting married and getting divorced and raising kids, and what I want to tell you is I built a house in sobriety. How did I buy a house? I knew they weren't going to give me a loan. When I was filling out the paperwork, I was like, they're never going to give it to you. Fill it out anyway. Oh, I got that house. I wanted to build on that house. Oh, they're never going to give you a construction loan. Fill it out anyway. You can't die from a rejection. Only your ego can tell you that. I built that house. It was an amazing, beautiful house that I had that I got to say, oh, that fireplace, I know where the stones came from. We collected them. We did this thing. When I saw the plans for the house and it said my name and the residence on the blueprints, I was like, well, I can have blueprints, but the house will never get built. And I thought, thanks for sharing. What's the next intended action? When we almost lost that house, I had to humble myself, you know, to go and get financing and do things. And it was humiliating. But who is this audience that I care about? I needed to save my house. And in the end, I did. And then I was able to sell that house to fund one of my dreams. And then by funding one of my dreams, it happened to be a nonprofit, it meant that, oh my God, then I was going to need more money because I wasn't a Getty and didn't sell like a $10 million property. But I just keep showing up for it and creating risk in my life to get what I want. So when I leave this life, at least I can know that I tried and that I reached for things. And failure is scary. But if my head will convince me I can't even make it through a day, you know, how am I going to reach for higher goals? Well, that I have a gift. It's called alcoholism. I have a gift, and it's the 12 steps that I get for free every day to say, okay, good, my head may be right, but I'm going to show up anyway. If anything I can say in this time that can make a difference in your life is that getting married, getting divorced, raising kids, building a house, almost losing it, but not selling the house, fighting the courts for my grandson, fighting hard. And at one point, they took him back to give his mom another try so she could neglect and abuse him. And I was so pissed. at God, at everything. I was in meetings just spewing, like, I don't understand. I don't understand. And then I was going to give up. And you know what I thought? No. I'm back in the fight. And I got back in that fight with no support except for God, although I felt God had abandoned me for a moment there. And I got that boy back. And he lives a life today that he never would have had with the woman that was going to raise him. And she's never come back for him, which breaks my heart in some ways. And in other ways, I will never lie in this room. I am so grateful so he could have a chance. Today, I show up for life. I apply the principles in all my affairs. I am not perfect by any means at all. But I will not give up my seat for any person, place, thing, or situation. I am grateful that I have these steps, and I think I've said it 90 times, if not once. And if you don't understand how to work the steps, just ask somebody to take you through it. Because the truth of the matter is this: when I first heard about the steps, I'm like, people are like, are you working your program? I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Like, you know, how do you work words? Like, everybody seemed to know. And I was like, how do you, what is, how do you, what, how do you believe a power? What the hell do you do? And what I did was, I couldn't get the first step. I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me because if I'm powerless, I mean, I have power over what I do. That doesn't, it makes no sense to me. So I would focus on the unmanageable and I'd list all the ways that my life was unmanageable and thinking that if I had power, would my life look like this? No, it would not. So I'll get powerless. It really was the easier step to go. I don't have to be certifiable, but I have moments of insanity where I just feel hopeless, helpless, out of control, or rageful or angry, whatever the emotion is. And that if there is a power, whether I can access God in that moment or another human being, I can, for a fact, be restored to sanity like that. I just have to be willing and open. And I hope today that I have said something that opens a door for you, that if you are new, that you know that you have the power to stay. And that none of us has done this perfect. We just show up every day with a level of humility and a willingness to change. Not only do I know that I've been restored to sanity, I know that I get it at any point that I want it. And I love step two. I was really grateful to get step two because it's that insane thinking that is also a creative pulse that like makes me take risks that other people will not. And almost every risk I've taken has scared me to death, but has taken my life to another level. And we have one life here, and we were given the opportunity to still have it by being in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And by God, I'm going to take every opportunity I get, no matter what my head tells me. So I want to thank you all for sharing this moment. I hope I said something that helped somebody today. But thank you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Lynn. That was